Hello, this is Lisa Giuliani from Wing TV. On the phone with me right now is Lieutenant Richard Russo of Hoffman Estates Police Department in Illinois. Lieutenant Russo, I'd like you to respond to the article written by Christopher Bolin of the American Free Press regarding the police incident at Hoffman Estates on August 15, 2006. He claims that he was brutalized and abused by Hoffman Estates police, that he was being surveilled by FBI agents, and I would like you to give your side of the story. What happened that day?
Yes, I did have a chance to read that article, and there was no abuse taking place. There were no FBI agents involved. We were not had any surveillance on him. What had taken place that day was our TAC officers, which are a gang suppression unit, semi-marked unit, were doing routine patrols in the area, and they did go by Mr. Bolin's home. And I want to add that police department did not know who Christopher Bolin was until just after this incident happened. After they passed his house, he waved to the officers saying, "Hello, FBI." They waved back. The undercover officers, or TAC officers, actually called them, continued to drive by. They then received a 911 call that was from Christopher Bolin stating that there was a suspicious vehicle in his neighborhood, acting as police officers or FBI. Hearing this, they knew that there was a mistake made, so they turned around and went back to his home to show them their ID and explain that they were not FBI and they were doing routine patrol. Doing so, he was in his front yard when they approached him and explained, showing them their badges, which they wear around their neck. Mr. Bolin became very belligerent, irate, threatening the officers in his body language as well as his words. He indicated in so many words that he had to run back into the house that it made the officers believe he may be going to get a weapon. Fearing for their safety, the officers did tackle him to keep him from going into the house because we don't know what's in that house. A fight ensued, a struggle ensued trying to subdue him. A taser had to be used to get handcuffs on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was taken into custody for resisting arrest and aggravated assault to the police officer.
Okay, now, the unit that was making a circuit of the neighborhood, this is a regular routine thing they do? That's their beat?
Oh, definitely. It's a gang suppression unit. There's three or four officers. They're semi-marked. They drive through the neighborhoods looking for any gang or drug activity. The town is about 50,000 people. We have our problems like any other town.
Normally, if someone is beaten by police or tasered and sustains injuries, wouldn't they seek medical assistance for that? It appears Bolin did not seek any medical assistance.
The police call paramedics anytime anybody's injured or shot with a taser or a weapon. That's standard procedure.
Uh-huh.
Fire department went on the scene. No injuries reported from Mr. Bolin or the police officers, and the paramedics left.
Mr. Bolin has claimed that he was placed into a cell with no water and told to drink from the toilet. Can you explain the cell situation?
Yeah, every single cell that we have has a built-in water fountain / sink. It doubles as a water fountain and a sink, and they're stainless steel, and they're bolted to the walls. I don't know where he's getting the toilet bowl.
Okay, so basically it sounds to me, anyway, like there wouldn't have even been a situation if Mr. Bolin didn't create a situation. Is that correct?
Oh, very much so. All this was a reaction to Christopher Bolin's movements and words. The officers came back just to explain that they were not FBI and explain why they were doing there, what they were doing there, and his actions caused them to fear for their safety and effect an arrest.
Had the police any knowledge or familiarity with who Christopher Bolin was before this incident occurred?
None at all. It took us by shock with the amount of phone calls after this. We had no idea. I just found out yesterday by looking on the web on who this person was.
Okay, so there were no FBI agents cruising this neighborhood. There were no FBI agents on his lawn confronting him?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay, and there's a court date set. Do you know when that is?
Yes, it's in Rolling Meadows, which is a town nearby, 9/13 of 06 in room 102 at 1:30 in the afternoon Chicago time.
Okay, can you just possibly tell me some of the things he was saying to the police that caused them to make this judgment call to restrain him? Was he yelling? You say, well, he says that there was some kind of confrontation. So what kind of things was he yelling to the police?
I can't really get into specifics because the court date is coming up. It's pending.
Okay.
I can't tell you that his body language, his words, his demeanor all made the officers in fear that he may be going to get a weapon. I can't get into the specifics of what he stated.
All right. I really appreciate you taking the time to explain the other side of the story and to our listeners, and I really hope this situation gets resolved, sir.
I hope it will do. I'm sure on the upcoming court date.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As you just heard, that was an interview that was conducted this morning between me and Lieutenant Richard Russo of Hoffman Estates Police Department. He is, I believe, the media liaison for that department regarding the Christopher Bolin arrest incident.
And as everybody knows by now, this story is blazing across the internet. And as I told Lisa last night, people would rather have a story that's filled with lies and illusion than a story that is true if the first story is more exciting. And the way this story has been blown out of proportion by the same exact paid spammers that we see every single time a story like this, like Bush Cheney indicted, like Barbara Olson arrested, like Texas City, Texas, and on, this story isn't as extreme, isn't as sensationalistic as what's been being strewn across the internet. Of course, there are some other players behind the scenes that are pushing this forward, just like Sam Danner's story.
Right.
And we want to come out today. We know we're going to take some heat, but we want to set the story straight. So, Lisa, tell everybody about your interview this morning and what the proper way we should frame this.
I had two separate conversations with Lieutenant Russo. The first was just a phone call that I didn't record. The second was the recording, the interview that I conducted with permission. It was impromptu. Basically, he says there were no FBI present, unlike what Christopher Bolin is putting forth. He says the law officers in the unmarked car make this regular routine circuit of the neighborhoods. They're a gang suppression unit. They are not FBI. When they did go back to his house to show him their ID...
Well, first, say how that part of the story is correct with Bolin, where he saw them drive by, he waved.
He saw them drive by, he was with his child, he and his child waved to the police, called them the FBI. The police just waved back, drove by, they got the 911 call. Since they were the closest unit, they responded, they realized it was the same address that they just drove by. So they went back to show Mr. Bolin their ID and explain who they were and what they were doing. And according to the police, Bolin reacted in a very confrontational, belligerent manner, very paranoid, yelling things. He started to run back into his house, and they didn't know, based upon his behavior and the gestures he was making, he was clenching his fists and acting like he was going to strike one of the officers. They decided to restrain him. He had to be tasered in order to get him into the handcuffs.
So that part of the story is accurate also, that there was a confrontation.
Right.
And to set the record straight, this is from not only Lieutenant Russo, but we also spoke with Christopher Petrick today. These weren't ADL agents.
Right.
These weren't Mossad agents. These weren't Israeli agents. These weren't FBI agents. This was Hoffman Estates PD, the gang suppression unit.
Right.
Repeat. Let me repeat, Lisa, because these stories are going around the internet in capital letters screaming out, ADL, Mossad, FBI thugs, arrest Christopher Bolin. They weren't ADL. They weren't Mossad. They weren't FBI. They weren't Israel. In fact, Lisa, when you asked Lieutenant Russo about the ADL, what was his reaction?
He didn't know what ADL stood for. I had to explain to him that it's an acronym for the Anti-Defamation League and what they're kind of all about. He didn't have any idea about that at all. He sounded to me pretty perplexed in our initial conversation as to why Christopher Bolin is escalating and making such an issue of something that didn't even need to be a situation. It appears from where I sit that it wouldn't have been a situation if Christopher Bolin didn't make it into a situation.
Now, before we go on, Lisa, another thing we have to confront is all these people, all of these people spreading this story across the internet. How many of them checked any details beyond the initial story? I would have to say almost none. Now, what you did was, in Bolin's story, it was something about 10 or 15 police cars. So you wondered, why were there so many police cars? And tell them the story about this escaped individual from a hospital.
The mainstream media reported that on the very same day as the Bolin incident occurred, a man suspected of using a fake prescription to get drugs was apprehended and brought to the hospital in that vicinity, and he escaped. And the police were looking for him, and they were looking for him at Hoffman Estates, the same neighborhood where Christopher Bolin lived. Now, I asked Lieutenant Russo about that because I thought perhaps that's why there were so many police in Bolin's neighborhood. They were looking for this drug suspect. Well, the officer said that that's pretty good reasoning on my part, but actually they apprehended this fellow later on, but the incidents happened hours difference of one another. So it
plus
had nothing to do with that. But so basically this is not a dead zone as far as no crime ever happens in Christopher Bolin's neighborhood, because the very same day they were looking for this drug suspect in Christopher Bolin's neighborhood.
Plus the suspect was 46 years old, Bolin is 49 years old, and the point is Lisa actually went in and checked and checked and checked. She called the Chicago Tribune. She called the police department. She talked to Lieutenant Russo. All of this fact-checking before we ran with the
story. To the Cook County Sheriff Department as well.
And
they didn't know anything about Christopher Bolin.
And how many people out there did any fact-checking whatsoever? Almost nobody. And it's pitiful. It's pitiful how, after all of these other hoaxes have been exposed and how we've explained, instead of running with these stories like lunatics, and it's no wonder the mainstream media, and it's no wonder why so many people in mainstream society laugh at conspiracy theorists, because it's this kind of behavior, this running with stories without checking anything, and there's a lot of people guilty of this, even people we've had on this show.
Yeah, a few more points to be made. The firefighters were on the scene because they were called in, as they are, with standard operating procedure whenever someone has to be restrained by the police or is tasered, just in case they sustain medical injury and need assistance. Christopher Bolin did not require any medical assistance, nor did he seek any at the time of this incident, afterward while he was in jail, nor did he get any medical assistance at the hospital or otherwise after he was released.
At least as far as we know now.
Well, no. According to Petherick, he's going to the doctor today. According to the editor of the American Free Press, supposedly Petherick's going to the doctor today.
Bolin.
But this is, Bolin. This is after the fact. He should have gone, and I would think anyone would have gone immediately, as soon as possible, get assistance. If you're injured and beaten up by multiple people and tasered and you're injured, wouldn't you go and get immediate medical treatment as soon as possible?
Exactly, especially a seasoned journalist that knows the way the game operates.
Right. Also, he says he was thrown into a cell with no water and told to drink from the toilet. As Lieutenant Russo pointed out, every single cell in that jail is equipped with a sink that also serves as a water fountain. So he had ample opportunity to drink water while he was in the cell, and I don't know why Christopher Bolin would not mention that fact instead of painting it like he was deprived of water.
Yeah, and there are some good points made in this when I was talking to Christopher Petherick. He was saying, well, doesn't somebody have the right to act paranoid and yell and scream on their front yard? Of course they did. Should police officers come in and beat somebody up? Of course they shouldn't. We're not siding with the police officers in this. We're not siding with Christopher Bolin. What we're saying is it's repulsive. It's so shabby and irresponsible to send these stories around without anybody checking the facts and looking further at it.
What we're saying is there's always more than one side to a story, and what we've seen with most of the alternative media, although the people at Signs of the Times have been digging into this because the story doesn't add up the way it's presented by Christopher Bolin. There's always more than one side to a story, and only one side has been being presented by the people in the alternative media largely. And no one seems to be questioning this story that's very questionable, coming from a source that has been putting forth in just the last few weeks a story that has been proven to be a hoax.
By Sam Danner.
All I can say is, it's not important. It's not so important to be first. It's more important to be right, to be accurate in the information you're providing.
And the problem is every single email that goes around escalates it and makes it a little bit more insane,
like,
a little bit more implausible.
You know, the one that got away, the more it gets told, the fish gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
And all this does, just like the Sam Danner story, just like Texas City, Texas, imminent nuclear blast, just like Barbara Olson, just like Bush Cheney indicted. All this does is make us as a whole, the alternative media and the patriot movement, look like jackasses.
As I told Lieutenant Russo, conspiracies are out there, but there isn't a conspiracy under every rock, okay? There isn't. And there are good cops and there are bad cops, just like in any other profession or vocation or organization.
And another thing that a lot of people are trying to do is tie it to 9/11 now.
Right. There's nothing to support that whatsoever.
Christopher Pethrick admitted this has nothing to do with 9/11, yet it's like, well, because Christopher Bolin investigated 9/11 and Israel's connection. Well, 9/11 Evil is the most dangerous book out there. And there aren't black helicopters over my house. There aren't stormtroopers out in my front yard. I'm not trembling in fear. I'm not paranoid because I'm not in that kind of mindset. And we have to. I mean, I told Lisa today, I said, if you look a year from now or 5 years from now, the same damn type of mob mentality, this groupthink, this herd mentality type of thought is still going to be out there. It's like a drug. It's like people become so desperate for something that they need to shoot crystal meth into their veins to get the rush off of the conspiracy theory, when 99% of the time, the explanation, the truthful explanation, is much more mundane and realistic. I was talking to Frank Whalen today. We both were. And he said he was getting calls from people that this is the beginning of the revolution now. You know, people want to call the governor of Illinois. They want to call the mayor of Chicago. They want to call Barack Obama, the state representative. They want 10,000 people in the streets protesting when, in all actuality, this case would never be anything other than it was. I don't know even how to describe it, except that...
Well, I think there's a lot of exaggeration. I think there's a lot of embellishment. And frankly, the police's story in this situation, in this circumstance, at least in my view, Victor, seems much more plausible and makes a lot more sense than what Christopher Bolin is presenting.
Well, and not only them, Lisa, but all these other paid spammers.
Yeah,
that
nobody
are sending
questions
this around.
Anything.
And first of all, it was just... That the police beat him. Then it was FBI beat him. Then it was ADL, FBI, police beat him. Then Mossad, ADL, Israel, FBI, police. And
we got a call last night where somebody wanted to interview Mr. Bolin about this story, and I said, oh, are you going to check the story out? And they said, well, we've read his account, and we want to interview him. I said, yeah, but are you going to check the story out? And, well, yeah, we're going to interview him. I said, oh, well, I'm going to check the story out.
So
because
nobody
there's more than one side.
Nobody
to
wants
story.
To do the legwork.
No.
Nobody wants to put in the time. They just want that quick rush where you put the needle in the vein and get the conspiracy drug running through.
And
you know?
If you want to know why it's so hard for people in the public arena to believe a lot of the information that we present, it's exactly because of stuff like this, where people jump the gun, they knee-jerk, and they rush to a conclusion, and really the first person who is getting people to believe these conclusions is Christopher Bolin himself. But he's not supporting his assertions with qualifiers, with facts. It just doesn't add up.
And I guess a police report is going to come out now. We're going to move on. We're going to talk more about this, of course. Mm-hmm. But if you go to the Wing TV homepage, this is what we were going to originally talk about today. And a lot of people ask me, especially newcomers to this movement, well, what are the best New World Order books? What should I be reading to get up to speed? And so I've been thinking about this for months and months, and that was our last Wing TV poll question. What is the best New World Order book ever written? Well, the viewer spoke. We posted that Monday. Now, today, here's my list. And what we're going to do is in a few minutes, we're going to call someone who's a member of this list, but we'll start at number 10. We'll go in reverse order. The number 10 book is
Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare by Michael A. Hoffman II.
It's an excellent, excellent book. If you want to know about the cryptocracy, that's what he names it. There's no other book that gets into it like this. Number 9, Ralph Epperson, The Unseen Hand. I was just talking to Ralph a couple of days ago, and a hell of a guy, and he does historical research like nobody else.
Number 8, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Anthony Sutton.
One of the best ever, and his analysis of World War II and the financing, I guess World War I going into World War II, and who actually financed Hitler is excellent. Number 6.
7.
Number 7, Mr. William Cooper, Behold a Pale Horse. Now, I have to admit, there's some things in this book that aren't accurate. But this is an underground classic that many people have cut their teeth on, and I would say it's
definitely worth reading.
Yeah, and this would arguably be the book that really began our modern-day patriot movement.
Okay, what are we up to, number 6?
Number 6.
Jim Keith, who wrote Mind Control, World Control.
Right.
Tavistock, MK Ultra, all that good stuff.
Yeah, one of the best out there. Regrettably, he died way before his time. And one of the best, one of the most underrated conspiracy writers there's ever been.
But certainly not forgotten.
Exactly. Now, next in line, Mr. Tex Mars. Of course, he has his book Codex Magica. But even before then, I couldn't narrow down, so this is the only one where I listed two books because they pretty much work together with each other to cover this subject. It's, the books are Dark Majesty and the second one, Circle of Intrigue. And if you want to get an in-depth look at the occult underpinnings of the New World Order, there's nobody that beats Tex Mars in that area.
Next in line, Descent into Slavery by Des Griffin.
Yeah, we've had Des on our show, and he also has a great book called Fourth Reich of the Rich, but there's especially a chapter in this book where he analyzes why America dropped the bomb on Japan, and really what it boiled down to, it wasn't because it was our way to win the war or to end it earlier because Japan was such a big threat. It all had to do with urban renewal. It was a way to wipe out parts of Japan and go in there and start anew, get the whole money machine going and so forth. And just excellent, excellent analysis. Number 3, I'm going to have to blow my own horn here a little bit. Victor Thorne's The New World Order Exposed. An encyclopedic look at the New World Order. And I just...
Actually, this book is a member of a special collection at the Library of Congress at their request. So I'm very proud of you for that.
Yeah, and as we've said on the show, we reference that book more than any other book still to this day.
Correct. Number 2 would be Michael Collins Piper's excellent book, Final Judgment on the JFK Assassination, a definite must-read.
Yeah, and not only does it cover Israel's central role in this assassination, but it gets into the CIA, the FBI, drug trafficking, organized crime, big business, other foreign entities that were involved in this. And it doesn't just look at the Kennedy assassination. It really is a look at modern history and this vast conspiracy.
And an in-depth analysis of all of it.
Right, and shows how these same characters have moved into our present day, including the Bush family.
Right.
You know? And finally, the best New World Order book.
According to our listeners.
Yep. No, according to me.
Oh, this is your list.
This is my list. According to me, is Jim Marr's Rule by Secrecy.
Tell you what, a lot of our listeners think that too.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't make the top 5, but it was included in the notable nominations.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to Jim a couple nights ago, and we're going to get him on the phone here in a few minutes. But when you want to know about the New World Order, secret societies, everything else, this book is so vast and epic in its scale that it goes from one end, from the beginning right up to the modern day, and there's no book that covers as much as this book right here. And Rule by Secrecy, if anybody wants, especially someone that say they're tuning into Wing TV for the first time ever, and they want to figure out what this whole New World Order is about, That's where to start.
It's a tremendous work. Yes. It really is.
Jim Maher's Rule by Secrecy. So, speaking of which, let's see if we can get Jim on the line here for a couple minutes. And we apologize for the...
Oh, by the way, while he's doing that, just so you know, Daryl Bradford Smith has something he's calling the police report regarding the Bolin incident presenting on his website. That's not the police report. That is the media release. So they are inaccurate.
Hey, Jim, it's Victor and Lisa.
There you are.
How are you?
Hi, Jim.
Well, we just went down our list, top 10 books, and let me read them off to you real quick, okay?
Okay.
Michael Hoffman, Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. Ralph Epperson, The Unseen Hand. Anthony Sutton, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. Bill Cooper, Behold a Pale Horse. Jim Keefe, Mind Control, World Control. Tex Mars, two books, Dark Majesty and Circle of Intrigue. Des Griffin, Descent into Slavery. Victor Thorne, A New World Order Exposed. Michael Collins Piper, Final Judgment. And the best New World Order book ever, Jim Maher's Rule by Secrecy.
Yay. Well, thank you a lot. You know what? When you read that off to me, it's amazing. But I think yours came out after Rule by Secrecy. Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
With one or two exceptions, every book you read off of that list was I used as a source for Rule by Secrecy.
Really?
Yeah, that's great company there. So, Jim, tell everybody.
I counted up. Are you ready for this? I counted up and made a. This is rough, but it's not that. It's not that far off. I consulted more than 300 books,
wow,
magazine articles, and periodicals and stuff to synthesize all that information for Rule by Secrecy.
Well, Jim, you know, we just were saying that it's a tremendous work that you present in that book.
It's so epic because it goes from the beginning to the end. And when I was talking to you a couple of days ago, tell everybody what you said, how you were waiting for this type of book to come out and it never came out. So what did you have to do?
Well, that's true. When I started off my journalism career in the Dallas-Fort Worth area back in the 60s, Dallas was kind of a hotbed of right-wing activity.
Uh-huh.
They had the Minutemen and the John Birch Society, and they had John Birch bookstores all over the place. So there was a lot of that material floating around talking about the United Nations was a big plot to take over the world, the Council on Foreign Relations. And, of course, this was before they formed the Trilateral Commission. And I just wondered, as a naive but inquisitive and open-minded journalist, you know, is there any truth to this? Do these secret societies really exist? Do they really exert any power? So I was really looking for one work that would give me the overview and the historical background on all these groups and to find out what's the factual information about them. And I never could find it, so I finally decided, I guess I'm just going to have to write it myself.
Well, we're all glad you did.
Yeah.
What are you working on now?
Well, I've got a brand new book out that's hitting the bookstores as we speak called The Terror Conspiracy.
Uh-huh.
Deception, 9/11, and the Loss of Liberty.
Oh, very good. We
and
can't wait.
I think that if people will actually read it instead of just, looking at it through their own particular narrowly focused lens, they will find that this puts 9/11 and the questions and all of the problems and the obvious and demonstrable foreknowledge, all of this into a broader perspective, into the New World Order, into the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, and also deals with our loss of liberty, the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security, having gone through the years when I used to just take my little bag and I might even have a pack of guns with me and then just get on an airplane, go somewhere, go about my business feeling very secure because I knew I could defend myself.
Uh-huh.
And now today, you can't take toothpaste. Okay?
Oh, I know.
Uh-huh.
And I am just so grateful that some terrorist has not tried to stick plastic explosives in his underwear, or I guess it all has to be.
What a mess that would be.
Well, nobody would be allowed to wear underwear anymore.
That's right. And I'll tell you, this is nothing but fear-mongering, and I'm sure you all have done your homework, so you realize that going back to all of these scares of terrorists, these heightened terror alerts, and like at the end of June when they said they caught seven guys in Miami plotting to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Well, it turns out they're a bunch of young black men in the ghetto, and they an under didn't find any explosives. They didn't find anything of material evidence to show they were going to do anything.
Imagine that.
Yeah. It was a sting operation, and now we have this thing, this hoo-ha over in England, and it's the same thing. They've arrested all kinds of people, but they haven't found any explosives.
Right.
And the question, of course, that sprang to my mind was, gee, if these are such terrible and sinister terrorists, how did they find out about them?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where's the proof?
Before they do anything. Yeah. And, of course, the answer was revealed that British intelligence agents, had infiltrated these cells. Well, okay. Now, but the thing is, now it's based on past history, COINTELPRO by the FBI back in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that they're not instigating these things?
Well, you're right. And you know what this sounds like, Jim, is we know about your book, Rule by Secrecy. We know about your Kennedy book, Inside Job about 9/11. But I want to commend you. Yeah, I want to commend you on a book that's one of your rare ones. It's called The War on Terror. Is that correct? The 9/11 book?
Well, let me tell you, this has gone through three incarnations.
Uh-huh.
And basically, here's the thing. Right at the day after 9/11, I posted on the internet a piece that said, "I agree with President Bush. We must not rest till we find out who was truly behind these attacks and see that they're punished."
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But instead of just buying into the company line, I actually started doing my research, and it became very clear through the evidence, just following the evidence, that at the highest levels of the federal government, they had to have known that this attack was going to take place.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we agree with that.
And they knew, and they allowed it to happen. And that's the best light you can put on it, because once you start studying the close social and business connections between the Bush family and the Saudis and the Bin Laden family, then it becomes very, very possible that somebody other than Osama Bin Laden instigated the whole thing.
I had the title wrong. It's called The War on Freedom. I'm sorry.
Right.
But that's
so I proposed to my publisher at that time, HarperCollins, I said I want to do a book called The War on Freedom. And they were kind of cool because the motions were running hot.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we got into the spring of 2002, FBI whistleblowers, CIA whistleblowers were coming forward saying, hey, I tried to warn them about this. They had every reason to know it was going to happen. And so the attitudes changed at Harper, and I actually got a contract with a pretty hefty advance to do this War on Freedom. And I busted my tail, and I got it done by September of 2002. And so all that information should have come out at this time, but the day after I passed the legal review, some vice president who had not even read the book decided they had to cancel it.
Uh-huh.
And they canceled it, and then paid me the rest of the advance.
Jim, I'm really looking...
money go away.
I'm really looking forward to your feedback on Victor's new book, 9/11 Evil.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah, we're going to put some books in the mail for you here in the next day or so when we're talking. But it's
right.
Funny...
But, well, to finish the story, though, I took the money advance money, and I went ahead and self-published the book as The War on Freedom.
Right.
Okay? But that was self-published. It got very limited distribution, sold a few off my website, a lot. And then a West Coast publisher bought the rights to it, but then decided he couldn't afford to publish the whole thing. He only published about a third of it, which was dealing strictly with the events of 9/11,
right.
And that was Inside Job. Okay?
Yeah. And
now the rights to Inside Job has been sold to another company and publisher in New York, and they have taken the other two-thirds, put it all back together. It's all been updated and expanded, and that is The Terror Conspiracy.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, because that book there, it gives a much bigger picture. And speaking of which, we only have a couple minutes left, but when we were talking the other day about Rule by Secrecy, and what I like the most about this book is it doesn't just focus on World War I, World War II, or on the Federal Reserve, or on one period of time. It goes from current day all the way back to biblical and pre-biblical times even. And I guess you take a little bit of heat for that. But if you're going to give a full picture, it has to be complete, doesn't it?
Exactly. Number one, I thought I was going to catch a lot of flack for Rule by Secrecy, but interestingly enough, the only pointed criticism or content-wise that I got was from a fellow who sent me a letter of the George Washington letter written back in the 1700s where he said, yes, no one doubts that the doctrines of the Illuminati had not come to America. And he pointed out that I had said it was written in 1782, and he said it was actually written in 1792.
Uh-huh.
And then he sent me a copy of the original letter, and I had a hard time. I couldn't tell what that date was, but obviously it has nothing to do. Nobody argued with the content.
Right.
Right.
The main point. The only real criticism I got, other than that, was the fact that I brought in the ancient Sumerians, the Anunnaki, the story about all of that. But as you say, when you track it all the way back, as I did, that's where you end up.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
I think you'd be leaving out a critical portion of the story if you left that out.
Well, and you provide
I think y'all can also see that by following that track, that after reading Ruled by Secrecy, don't you get the very definite impression that there's been a small handful of people all throughout our history that's been trying to get hold of and control the human population?
Well, and if you want to give this complete picture, why stop at 1700 or why stop at 1200? I mean, this goes back all the way to the beginning, and it's in other fields, I guess, they investigate this more, but it seems like the Patriot Movement or this alternative media just neglects it, and that's why I think I like that book the best, is that it gives the whole entire picture.
If we're going to look at it at all, we might as well look at the panoramic perspective and get the broader view.
Exactly. Because, see, that's how they keep us divided, distracted, and confused,
uh-huh.
is they get everybody arguing over the trees so that nobody can see the forest.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I guess that's the same with your JFK investigation. Then you write a book on UFOs, and all of a sudden you take heat, you know, you're the best thing in the world, and then, you know, and...
And I'm the worst thing in the world because I write about UFOs, but I'm not even sure where, Victor, you and Lisa stand on the UFO question, but I'm going to tell you this just flat out. There is a reality there, and if you just dismiss it out of hand, then there's no way you're going to be able to adequately figure out what's really going on in the world today because you're missing a big piece of the puzzle.
Well, when I cut my teeth on this stuff, 1990 was when my eyes were opened, and the first year or two, almost everything I read was in the UFO field, and then it branched off the Trilateral Commission and everything else. But you're right, there is information, and there's a lot of hoaxsters and hucksters, of course.
There's a lot of chaff out there with the wheat, that's for
right.
sure.
Yeah, yeah. But Jim, we just wanted to call you today, and we wanted to let you know that whenever people ask us, you know, especially newcomers to this movement, where do I start? What's the best book? We always say, Jim Marr's Ruled by Secrecy, and we just want to let you know that this is a lifetime achievement, what you've done in that book.
And we really appreciate that you're out there doing what you're doing still.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and I would only encourage you and your listeners to just start paying closer attention to little items that are kind of getting short shrift in the media, like the Canamex Highway, the superhighway that's going to run from Mexico to Canada,
mm-hmm.
and have Mexican-staffed customs port in Kansas City. It's going to obliterate the borders between Mexico, Canada, United States. It's going to devastate West Coast industry and commerce because all those Chinese ships will come
yep.
to Mexico, offload those carriers off the trucks and haul them all the way up into the U.S. and Canada. It's nothing but another movement by the New World Order, and people are not really even paying attention because it's not being pointed out by the corporate-controlled news media.
Well, and that's going to go right through your neck of the woods.
Exactly.
That superhighway.
In fact, I went to a public hearing here, and that's another thing, too, folks. This is not some vague plan. They're already having public hearings in Texas for what they call the Trans-Texas Corridor, and they're not even mentioning that this is only the Texas leg of this superhighway, and when I tried to ask people who were there to make this presentation, their answer was, well, we're just hired. We don't know anything about that.
Uh-huh.
You know? And
yeah.
So it's all being done in secrecy.
Right.
Congress has not authorized any money for this, made any studies of this. and when I went to this hearing, the whole question that they were putting before this audience was not, do you want this? The question was, which route do you want it to take? And one of the routes, the farthest west route, conceivably could just run right through my property, right?
Wow.
That's all you need, huh?
And if they decide that's where it's going to go, then the Supreme Court has rule that private contractors can just take your property if they can show they can make better use of it.
Jim, we might see you out on the road someday with your suitcase and your thumb sticking out,
That's
huh?
That's right.
Hey, Jim, one last thing. A couple months ago, somebody sent us five DVDs that they made themselves on the Kennedy assassination. It was like somewhere between 12 and 13 hours of footage. And we watched the whole thing, and in one of these old interviews on TV, guess who appeared?
Well, that's right. Jim Mars.
Jim Mars.
So there I was.
Back in the 70s, this was, and I can't remember whose show it was or who the guests were, but we're watching this, and it was just a whole bunch of different interviews and segments, and we're like, hey, that's Jim Mars.
Well, I've been at it for a long time. And you know what? I was on a radio program earlier today, and one of these happy, fast-talking DJ talk show host guys during drive time, and he's razzing me about 9/11 and my new book, and he's going, you know, you must be an idiot. Do you really believe any of this stuff? Yada, 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 yada. And I'm going, holy cow, it's deja vu all over again. That was the same crap that I got back in the 70s, 60s, and 70s trying to tell people that there was a conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy.
Right.
And now, of course, the polls show 85-90% of the public now clearly understands there was a conspiracy to kill Kennedy. We just don't know precisely what it was because the government is still hiding away or is lost at the crucial evidence.
They use the same tactics over and over again, don't
That's
they?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thanks
What really gets me is when they try to intimate that somebody that questions 9/11 is unpatriotic. Well,
exactly.
Yeah. The most patriotic thing you can do is question the reality of what's going on and what caused the death of our fellow citizens and what's continuing to cause the death of our military people.
We agree 100%.
What was that quote that Lisa, that Jim wrote in the beginning of that book,
higher the authority, the harsher the questions. Jim, I've repeated that line so many times to people that you wrote in the book that you sent to us.
Right.
And I will continue
Well, it's true. You know, not only question authority, but the higher authority, the harsher the question.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, again, rule by secrecy points this out all through history. It's been conspiracies, okay? In fact, here's another one of my quotes. If it's not an act of God, it's a conspiracy.
And
if you think about it, that sounds kind of funny, but it's true. I mean, yes, accidents happen. Ships sink, planes crash, you know, but if it's not just an act of God, an accident, then somebody planned it that way.
And Jim, a lot of times those planes have a little help crashing, don't they?
That's right, and that's, you know, we could get into so much stuff, you know. Surely, I know you guys don't believe that John Kennedy Jr. just got lost in the fog and flew his plane into the ocean.
No,
we just did an interview with the guy, John Hankey, that put out the DVD recently.
Isn't that a fascinating, he's got a really fascinating theory there, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
I'll tell you, we think he's right on the mark.
I never could understand, having been an award-winning aviation aerospace writer, how it took him almost 3 days to find that airplane. I mean, it's got a transponder in it, you know.
Yeah, and it took 17 hours before they even started the real search for it.
And
so,
all of the missing stuff, like the backup battery and the flight log.
The seat.
The seat.
Yeah,
and the one that really got me was, and I checked on this, and it's true, according to the National Transportation Safety Board accident report, the fuel switch had been turned off.
Yep, you're right.
That was the most damning thing in our view.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I mean, you know, that's like cutting off the gas to your car and then wondering why it doesn't go anywhere.
Exactly. Well, Jim, thanks for coming on today. The book, the best New World Order book ever written, Rule by Secrecy. The author is Jim Mars. He's still doing fantastic work. And, Jim, we just want to thank you.
How do they get your new book, Jim?
The new book, The Terror Conspiracy, will be available at all bookstores. And eventually, if I can get moving, on my website, jimmars.com. That's Mars with two R's. And, of course, Amazon and various other places.
Very good. Well, thanks for
so
coming
much.
On. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you all. Keep up the good work.
Thanks,
and enjoy the rest of your summer, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV. Until then, keep your eyes open. As you can tell, there is a whole hell of a lot going on.
As usual. See you then.